Hello again, everyone. Once more, we're delving inside beIN Sports Champions Club, a den full of trophies, talent, and opinions. No one has won more Premier League titles than Ryan Giggs. No one has managed to do an unbeaten season in the Premier League like Jens Lehmann. And no one in the red of Liverpool has lifted the championship trophy more recently than John Barnes. Gentlemen, you're all very welcome again to our weekly catch-up inside the Champions Club. Since we last spoke, not only have we had more successful Bundesliga action, but also the news that Spain is on the verge of returning in the middle of next month. I wonder what your reaction to that is, Ryan.
Well, obviously, it's good news. I think everyone's been watching the Bundesliga to see how it's gone and sort of get guidance from them. And with no big setbacks, I think the other leagues will follow. So it's good news that La Liga's got a date, that they are planning on coming back. And again, I think they're a couple of weeks in front of us regarding the Premier League and the training. So, yeah, it's good news. It'll be more football for us to watch. I think everyone's obviously watched a lot of the Bundesliga over the last couple of weeks. And now with La Liga starting, more football to keep an eye on. And regarding ourselves here in the Premier League and British football, it's good news.
Jens, everything seems to have gone pretty well in Germany so far.
Yes, the discipline is still there. Now even teams like Hertha, and this is my personal opinion, they know how to celebrate now after goals. Before, they were hugging each other. Now they've learned. Even other teams, they do that really well. Whereas I have heard that they've been told that they could have a normal celebration after a goal. So that was kind of a misunderstanding. But I think the level is good. Could be better, obviously. But what do you expect after 8 weeks of break? And we are all happy that nobody has been infected, that it's a smooth competition without any disruption so far. And we keep our fingers crossed that starting with tonight's biggest game, with Bayern Dortmund versus Bayern, it will continue like it has before.
John, there are some dissenting voices in England about wanting to go back. Do you have sympathy for those voices, wherever they come from, but most notably from the BAME community?
Well, first of all, there are two different aspects to it. There's the getting back to training, and there's getting back to playing. Obviously, Germany have gone back to playing, so they've been through the process of training with social distances. And of course, in Spain, when they start to play. But they're two separate instances. In terms of going back to train, you can go back and train safely with social distances because there's lots of routines and exercises you can do whereby you don't have to be together. So that is, I think, a pretty straightforward one in terms of people wanting to go back. But there are some players who decided they don't even want to go back to training, like Troy Deeney, for example, because he has a young child who's got asthma problems. So it's understandable. But in terms of when they actually go back to play, which we haven't got a date for yet, I think we're going to come across more problems then, because then I think you'll really see some players who really do not want to do that. But what is the solution? You know, you can't ask players or individuals, even when going back to work, when they think they should go back to work, because you're going to get people saying, we shouldn't go back yet, or yes, we should go back now. So what has to happen is the authorities have to say, now we are going to go back to work, be it football or something else. But if some people decide that they don't want to go back, we have to have empathy with them and say, well, that is your right. So, as you rightly said, there are players who will not be happy with going back either to even to training at this point in time. But it comes to a point whereby the powers that be have to make a decision when we go back, but you can't hold players to that. And I can't say to players, you're wrong for not wanting to go back or you're wrong for wanting to go back. Each individual has his own mind to make up.
Do you not think, though, the way that Germany has acted in the fact that it's put in this protocol that has players tested every couple of days, that everything is being done for the safety of the players and the staff around the whole clubs? And that should be a guarantee that everything is done so players can go back.
Well, the same thing, protocols will be put in place here in England. But if players then decide, as Troy Deeney, that I know the protocols are there, but I'm still not happy, we can't force him to do that. And although the protocols will be there, there will be players who will be tested positive for COVID-19, as there has been. So therefore, you look at Burnley, for example, and some clubs where players have tested. So they take them out, they isolate them, and they react. So if they're waiting for it to disappear and to be given 100% guarantees that it won't happen, that's not going to be around for a couple of years anyway. So, you know, as I said, individuals have to decide whether they mitigate the risk, because there is always going to be a risk, and say, let us go back. But you will still have players, even under those circumstances, who will be uncomfortable with going back, and we have to respect their wishes.
Do you think, Ryan, that it'll be more difficult actually for England to get back than it was, say, Germany, because that sort of conformity was there in Germany and it may not be there in England?
Yeah, I mean, I can only speak looking on the outside, but it looks like Germany have not had it under control, but they look a little bit more of sort of the it just looked like it was smoother. I know that obviously we've had a lot of deaths and a lot of cases, but yeah, I think we have to learn from Germany, because now that, like I said, they look like from the outside that they've done everything right and everything is progressing.
I think what you're alluding to, Angus, is the fact that in Germany they have been more disciplined in terms of the way they've dealt with it as a nation. And I agree with you, because in England we have a lot of dissenting voices of people going to the beaches, people not socially distancing. So that is why we have the problems we have. A lot of people are talking about conspiracy theories. So therefore, I think Germany were much more disciplined, organized in terms of the general public obeying and understanding what the rules were. We haven't. So that is why there's no guarantee that, yes, from a footballing perspective, we can then get back involved, but the rest of the country may not have done that, so therefore there's always that risk. So we haven't dealt with it as a country in the way that Germany has. I'm talking about just a normal population.
What we admire the English way of life is that from our perspective, you're very disciplined and you always stick to the rule, which is, for example, when you have to queue up somewhere, there are queues of 100 or 200 yards or meters, and we would never do that in Germany. So don't overestimate us as a nation and our discipline. What I'm asking myself is, I think we have 180,000 cases of infected people. Yeah, of course, it's much higher because nobody has been tested. We only have 7,000 deaths. And England, they say they have 260,000 cases. And they have, I think, 36,000 casualties. Hmm. Why is that? I don't know it. But when you're infected in England, the probability of dying is much higher than in Germany. But you're infected anyway. It's not that people go to the hospital here, because the hospitals, they're all empty. They thought the hospitals will be overwhelmed by sick people. But it's the opposite. Yeah, they have working problems there. Some of them are unemployed, the employees of the hospitals. So the complete opposition of what we thought. And I don't know, you're living in England. Can you explain to me why you have more casualties than us? I think it has nothing to do with discipline, but I don't know why.
It's discipline in this circumstance. I'm not talking about general discipline. Yes, we do queue up. And of course, we're very polite. But of course, I don't know what it's been like in Germany, but I know in England, because I've got two children in the NHS, and they've said, if you look at what's been happening on beaches, people not socially distancing, people talking about freedom, so therefore we can do what we want, and you can see what's happening in America, which is even worse because of this idea of what freedom is. I think that we have not dealt with this in the way that they have been more disciplined just over this. I'm not talking about generally in this instance. And it's funny what you say about the doctors, because my daughter now is an unemployed doctor, interestingly, because, of course, what she has said, that she was supposed to be in New Zealand for 2 months. She came back. She was going to have 3 months off anyway, but she came back early to work in the NHS. Then the girl whose position she took as a doctor came back from India. But there should be lots of things for doctors. But because now a lot of the hospitals are only doing COVID cases, normally you'd have lots of doctors, because people come to the hospital for cancer, for treatments, for lots of different things, but all of that has stopped because of the virus. So they have got so many doctors now who aren't working, which is just, in my opinion,
same
crazy.
Same here.
Let's move back to the football, rather than the sort of the sociological debate about what is going on in our respective countries, and take you back to your career, these guys, and the strength of the character that you might have had. Say, Ryan, if you were a young player during this, and it's an unnerving time for anyone, but if you were a young player at the beginning of your career, how much help do you think you would have needed, and how much help do you think they need now in getting back to training, or you know, maybe they don't?
No, I think if I was a young player, I would be under the impression that I can't wait to get back to train. Can't wait back. You know, I'm young, I'm healthy, and I know that there have been cases where young, healthy people have been ill. But I would have thought that no. I think you think you're indestructible when you're younger. I think when I've got young children or when my wife was pregnant, that's a different story. But when I was young, no. I would have thought, let's just get back to train. I trust the club that it's a safe environment, and I've missed football. So that would be my thoughts of me as a 18, 19, 20-year-old player. I would have been a lot more sort of, I wouldn't have been thinking of the consequences. Of course, when you're older, then that's when you start thinking of the consequences of, and how you can affect others. So that would have been my view, you know, as a young player coming through.
Was there someone in the dressing room you were looking up to that you'd like leadership from when you were first in that dressing room?
Oh, yeah. I come into a dressing room which it felt like there was just me as a boy and a dressing room full of men. Brian Robson, Steve Bruce. Brian Robson was amazing. I know that Barnsley played with him with England as a captain, as a leader, as someone who helped, because he was coming towards the end. So it was very easy for him to just concentrate and enjoy his last couple of years at United. And he was so unselfish in the way that he would help me. And you get helped when things aren't going your way. When you're playing well and you're flying, no one really speaks to you or you don't really ask for advice. It's when you have a bad game or you've got injured and you're coming back from injury and you don't feel quite right, or the manager has a little go at you. They were the times when Robbo really helped me as a young player coming through. And it could be anything like, you know, just coming on the coach on the way back from a game. I've had a bad game. The manager's had a go at me and just said, don't listen to him, you know. You'll be back next week. And as a 17, 18-year-old, you know, Brian Robson saying that to you was one of your heroes. You suddenly feel from the weight being, the whole world being on your shoulders to actually, okay, right, fair enough. Because you haven't got anything to reference. You haven't got anything to go back to. These experienced older players have.
The thing with that, Angus, just to go to Ryan's first point, when he spoke about how we would have been if we were playing now, times have changed. If you were to ask Ryan, myself, Jens, when we were young players growing up, and if we were young growing up now, with the same occasions, the same instances we went through, which people may now call bullying, which we wouldn't have called it bullying when we were young. We're told to call it character building. If you then if you magically transport us now and say, how would we be now? You then have to take into consideration, we would have been brought up in this atmosphere, this environment, which then means that Ryan Giggs's perception and his attitude and his philosophy wouldn't be 44, 42, whatever age he is, now thinking he's 18 years old. He would have been brought up in this environment. Oh. So we would be just like the players now.
46, John, but thank you.
46, I'm just trying to help you out. We would have been brought up in this environment. So if you ask me, if somebody pulled my arm, I'd be going over for a free kick. I would be, as much as I don't think I would, because I said I would never go down because in my day we didn't go down. So if you're asking me if I was an 18-year-old now, if I was an 18-year-old now being brought up, but that meant I was born in, you know, the year 2000, I would be just like they are now. I may then feel I'm worried about going back because of what's happening. Whereas if you ask me, 57-year-old John Barnes, if I was an 18-year-old, I would say, yeah, let's just go back and play because this is how it was in my day. So I don't judge the players now for taking any decision they do in terms of whether they're going to go back, whether they're going to die for a free kick, whether they're going to mix with people, whether they're going to mix with the community, because this is what it is. This is the way it is now.
So what did they used to do at Liverpool as part of your character building then, John?
Get on with it.
That was it.
Get on with it. Yeah. So when older players, they used to hit around the head, and you know, when what's considered bullying now, and if you can't take the abuse, and if someone shouts at you and you can't take it, you're not going to make it, son. Out you go. Which wasn't wrong. It wasn't right. That's just the way it was. So yeah. Obviously, that's not the way it is now with the young players. But so if you're asking us older players, how would we react now? We're still thinking about how we were brought up and what we did. But of course, we wouldn't be doing it now.
Jens, you had a little chuckle when John was talking about character building. Were there no character building techniques in Germany then?
Not at all. Character was, like Barnsley described it really well. I played for Schalke and we were second division, zweite Bundesliga. So we were favorites in getting promoted again. But at the half of the season, we found ourselves at the bottom of the table. So our own fans were throwing stones at us after we have left a stadium. I remember it was one game in Kassel. So that was kind of a different character building, but everybody knew, okay, if we have to come out, or if we want to come out of this situation, we have to dig really deep, and there's no mental weakness allowed now. We have to just pull ourselves together. That was some other kind of character building.
And who were you looking up to in your early career?
You won't know the players because, as I said, it was second division in Germany at the time. Yeah. So there were a couple of guys.
But what were the characteristics of those players that you were sort of calling on?
Well, you always figured out who were the intelligent guys. Yeah, because some other guys, they're shouting and they're very emotional. And after a while, you think, okay, it's not my cup of tea. I actually turn a little bit towards, for example, the captain, Andy Müller, he was called, he's still a friend of mine. He was sporting head of sports later on for Schalke. He was some guy who I was looking at times. But there weren't a lot of fantastic guys. And I mean, it was a club which was about to get relegated into third division. So you can imagine the level on all different departments wasn't that great.
But if you listen to what Ryan said, if you know what Ryan said when he spoke about the players you looked up to and the advice they gave you, like with Brian Robson, for example, if Ryan was down in the dumps and Brian would come to me and go, listen, don't worry about it, X, Y, Z, blah, blah, but he wouldn't necessarily mollycoddle him, put his arm around him and then go and tell people off for shouting at Ryan. He'll say, this is what you have to deal with. In the face of adversity, when things aren't going well, you have to be tough. They didn't say when things aren't going well, people have to be softer with you, which is what we're doing now. People have to be softer with the people who are getting upset when things aren't going their way, and we have to understand. Whereas back then, it wasn't about being soft with them. It's about explaining to them that this is how hard it is going to be, and you have to be tough to get through it. And once again, it's not right, it's not wrong. That's just the way it was.
And who was doing that to you, John?
Well, at Watford, for example, by the time I got to Liverpool, I was 23 years old. I'd played for England for 6 years. So I was a man then. I was able to deal with it. But at Watford, we was Graham Taylor. And Graham Taylor certainly wasn't soft with you, even when he shouted at you and he gave you a rollicking. And you had Pat Rice, who won the double with Arsenal, Luther Blissett. A lot of players who came up on the fourth division, Ian Bolton, Keith Pritchard. These are players who had been in the fourth division. We're now in the top division, finishing second to Liverpool in our first year when Man United finished third. But these are players from the fourth division who were in their early 30s, who were tough, old-school footballers. And if you couldn't put up with whatever was coming your way, you wouldn't make it.
There's something Ryan probably doesn't know because he always played for Manchester United. But when you play lower league, there are some great players as well, technically. But they play lower league for a reason. Because mentally, they are just lower league level. And sometimes some players manage to work themselves up, but some always stay on that level. Not because they're worse footballers, but because they cannot just produce it in important games.
And it works the other way around as well. Because if you remember, and I'm not being disrespectful to a lot of the Wimbledon players because they were good players, but if you look at Vinny and people like that, they were great characters. And you look at players who made it right to the top, not because they had great ability, but they had the right mentality. And as Jens said, it also works the other way.
You must be really disappointed, Ryan, that you haven't got a relegation battle on your CV.
You haven't lived until you've been through one of them.
That's when you know the pressure can't get bigger. Yeah.
The pressure comes in all different forms, doesn't it? But, you know, pressure to go and win a title again must be equally as hard as, you know, a pressure to avoid a relegation.
From my point of view, it was the hardest to try and fight relegation.
Harder than winning a championship.
Much harder, much harder. Yeah. Because, you know, if you look back and when you want to win a trophy, you know that you have won much more games than you've lost them. Mm. But when it's the opposite at the bottom of the table, so your confidence is obviously much lower. And then trying to be strong is a much bigger challenge.
And what's the consequence? The consequence, if you're going for the championship and you don't win, is the consequence you finish second. Next year, you're going to go again. The consequence in a relegation is that you're now in the second division, which is a much bigger consequence than finishing second.
Yeah.
Or the third division, as it might have been with Jens. Yeah. Do you see, were those, throughout your extended career, and you're the latest to retire, Ryan, do you feel that those mentors are still there within the club? Are the new players that are coming in when you were leaving, say, United, looking up to you and drawing on your experience? Or do you feel this is sort of a different breed of footballer now?
No, it's different. It is different. I think just towards when I was coaching at United, there was still the likes of Michael Carrick, Wayne Rooney, who you would call old school, who were still trying to help young players. But it was becoming less and less. Like I said, when I come into the dressing room, it felt like there was seven or eight who would help you out. And now you sit down with young players and it's not about, don't worry, everything will be okay. You sit down with them with a laptop and you're going through their game and you're going through the mistakes and the good things that you that they've done. So that was a million miles away from when I was starting out. But coaching now, you know, the coaching staff is so much bigger. There's analysts. So you have a structure, you have a framework where there's a lot of people who can help you, but in a different way. In a different way, they can actually show you what you're doing wrong and back it up by stats. So it's a different world. And I would have liked all that when I was a young player, you know, looking at the, obviously stats can sometimes lie, but look at the stats and looking at things that you would have done. Because when I was younger, I never looked at the game that we just played. I never watched it. And
you didn't.
Hardly any games during the season. I was just always looking to the next game. So,
because you were always winning.
Not always.
I'll tell you what, Angus, I see a huge similarity between Manchester United and Liverpool. Huge similarity. And I'll tell you in what way. In the way that when I first went to Liverpool, Liverpool were a successful team before I was there. And the demands to win and the pressures to win was the most important thing. Regardless of whether you have superstars, Ian Rush, Kenny Dalglish, and they'd won everything, the demand to win year in, year out was there. Yeah? Then, when all of a sudden Manchester United, say early 90s and things had changed, if you look at the way the players were after, say, 1992, 93, was that the players, because Liverpool still was a huge club, and it seemed that the players there were happy to be at Liverpool without necessarily realizing the responsibility to win. So when we were finishing third in the league, fourth in the league, we were still Liverpool players because we were bigger than 99% of the teams. Even if they finished above us, Arsenal, whoever, but we were Liverpool players without the demands to win. So we still got that kudos and that feeling that we are great and we're better than everybody else because we're Liverpool players. Now with Manchester United, when Ryan was there and he came through and they started to win all the Premier League, regardless of whether they won the Premier League the year before, they had that demand that they put on themselves to win. Then I think after Man City took over and other teams took over, Manchester United still were the biggest club and the players were happy to be at Manchester United without recognizing the responsibility of having to win. Because if they finished third and Tottenham finished above them, they were still bigger than Tottenham players because they played for Manchester United. And that happened at Liverpool. And you look at Manchester United now, and it's still a huge club, still got great players, but I don't feel they feel the responsibility of necessarily having to win. Because I speak to Man United fans now, and they're going, oh, you know, we're going to finish fourth. We can finish fourth. You know, and they will be happy with that because they're in the Champions League. And I think that's the big difference.
Is that fair, Ryan?
Yeah, and that is a lot to do with character. So we just talked about it. Not only you have to have talent, but you have to have that character and that character to drive others around you as well. rather than just settling. And again, you know, the characters who we brought, I touched on the players that we had, and then you would bring a Roy Keane in, who would just add to that and just take it on to the next level. And then we would...
But you don't feel he'd learn from what he saw. He would learn that this is what we have to do at Manchester United. He came from Forest, Roy, because I remember his first game was against us for Nottingham Forest. And as much as he had that, he would have been brought up in that in the Man United way type of thing.
Yeah, and it's something that players do touch on when they come to United. I used the example of Rio Ferdinand, brilliant player when he come to United. But all of a sudden, he's one of the worst players in training. In the boxes that we used to play. So the little keep ball, 8v2, and he's thinking, wow. And all of a sudden, you're under pressure before training has even started, because that's part of the warm-up. And that was nothing. You know, he wouldn't get the mick taken out of him at Leeds, at West Ham, if he was in the middle. At United, it's constant. It was constant. If you're in the middle, they're putting the bib on you, just keep it on, you know. And instantly, you're probably going home thinking, what's just happened there? I used to enjoy training. So you have to step up to that next level. I'm just giving you a little example of just the players. And there's
you have to learn.
There's no hiding place. And no matter, he was 30 million, the most costly defender in the world. It didn't matter. And of course, by the end of it, he was the best. He was the best in the box because he was so good with his feet. He was confident now. So there is a bit of, or there was a bit of sink or swim.
Was part of the problem at Arsenal, Jens, that I think by the end of Arsene Wenger's reign, actually top four was enough. And that was what clouded the Emirates, really.
Yes, I mean, people getting used to everything. And in football, they're getting used to decline. So first, we were competing for the trophy, for the championship with United. Then I think with Chelsea, I don't know. And all of a sudden, the gap between Arsenal and I think United and City was becoming bigger and bigger. Then Liverpool got stronger, even Spurs. And all of a sudden, people getting used to set their target with the fourth place on the table, which is obviously for my generation wasn't never enough. Because we were used to compete for number one. And even now, I think they would be happy to actually make number five or six on the table. It's, as I said, it's you're getting used to mediocrity, and somebody has to get there, or some a new manager, probably Mikel Arteta, who I've heard is a good guy, or some players who have to break this mediocrity, yeah, with their attitude, with their daily approach of training and matches. It's not easy.
That's what Jurgen Klopp did at Liverpool. We were happy to finish fourth, as much as we didn't think it. Subconsciously we were. And then all of a sudden he came and he changed that attitude that fourth is not enough. And he did it when we really, if you think about the money we've spent, the players we've had, he really shouldn't have done that. But he's an attitude and a state of mind to bring the right players in and to demand that, and also to have the fans on board. So you have the fans on board, and I think the Arsenal fans got used to the fact, not just with the players, that they want to finish in the Champions League. And once you get used to that situation, which we did for probably 15 years, it's hard to get out of.
I think it's what I realize in German football as well, and obviously in a lot of other clubs, there are only a few people who know how to win, or who have it in their mind, in their DNA, like Barnsley said about Jürgen Klopp. How to manage people and how to play together with other players and always make them conscious of you have to win. Yeah, and you cannot be nice. That's the first lesson I've learned. If you want to win, you cannot be nice. Because preparing a win is never nice. It's hard work. Preparing a defeat, I think that's very easy. So that's a complete different mindset. And you only find a very, very few people who got that.
And that is why I think if you look at what Jurgen Klopp has done, he's looked at the character, and Ryan mentioned it, the character of the players. Forget your ability. Forget your ability. You look at the character of the players. And that is where, when Liverpool is linked with certain players and you think Jurgen Klopp won't particularly like that type of player, it's got nothing to do with his ability. It's to do with the character. But I think what's happened since the Premier League is that clubs have then said, who are the best players? So let's look to spend money and buy the best players, because look what they've done. They're fantastic. They're absolutely fantastic. And I use Pierre Aubameyang as an example. What a great player he was. And you thought, well, Jurgen Klopp had him at Dortmund. Why isn't he coming to Liverpool? No matter how good you are, it's about your character. And that is, I think, one of the biggest things that clubs are now going to do. Because what you do, you end up spending hundreds of million pounds on these great players. But because of their character, they don't produce.
Do you just think, Ryan, then the first thing that you learnt in an Old Trafford dressing room or on the Old Trafford, you know, on a training ground, was that winning mentality, that you had to win, as Jens was saying, that you can't be nice, you've just got to win?
No, you have that. And when you have sort of that culture, even the players that it maybe doesn't come naturally, they come with you. So then you have the manager, you have the older players in the dressing room, then you have the talented players who maybe, if they went to another club, would just be a nice player rather than being an effective player. So it's that added little percent that you do need. I remember Sir Alex buying, Wayne Rooney, fantastic talent, and Alan Smith in the same window because of both the characters. They were both street fighters. He watched Alan Smith bully Steve Bold and Tony Adams in a game and just up front for Leeds and elbowing them and smashing them. And that was character. I played with Smudger. I played with better centre forwards, but he actually brought a sort of nastiness, really, and that edge. So it is, of course, about talent, but you have to have that character and then how that character affects your teammates. So it's very important that, you know, some of the players that I played with early on when we won the league would, if they'd have gone to a different club, they'd just be nice players where, of course, they're talented, but they didn't have that extra percent to go the whole way, to go that extra yard. And it's hard. It's hard winning leagues. It is very hard, and you have to go for the whole season, and then you have to go the next season. So that is character.
And Ryan will tell you, my last, I would say, 3 years at Liverpool, when we had, obviously, you know, the 4-3s against Newcastle, and we had a fantastic team when things were going well. McManaman, Fowler, Redknapp were scoring goals, but we couldn't win 1-0, and we couldn't get a nil-all draw when we weren't playing well. And I remember March, getting into March, and we were not far off the top, and everyone's getting excited because this could be our year. And I always felt, from 93, 94 up until I left in 97, when we were in with a chance, come March, I always felt we were going to fall away. Because from March to winning the league, it's not about how good you are. It's not about playing good football. It's about getting a result by any means necessary. And I remember Man United were getting results even when they weren't playing well. And people were going, aren't they lucky? They came back in the last minute to score an equaliser. And it's like, that's what the character is when you're talking about winning leagues.
Were you too nice then as a team, John?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm not talking about in terms of the way we played physically. I'm talking about mentally, whereby we were just happy to play great football and win 4-3, but there are times when things weren't going well and we weren't playing good football. How do we then win? And that is what has happened. And I think if you look at I think that's why Liverpool have improved, because Liverpool in the last, even when Jurgen Klopp's first 2 years, they had to play good football to win. If they didn't play good football, they couldn't win. The Arsenal team with the Invincibles, they never played well in all the games and outplayed teams, but they just didn't lose. And Man United had it for many years.
Jens, did you feel inside that dressing room then? What when it didn't, you didn't follow up after, say, the Invincible season? What was lost from that? Was it just a matter of course, or what did you feel that some part of that mentality went, that you started becoming too nice?
I think Arsenal made one mistake at the time, probably a minor mistake, but. Now I think it was quite a mistake, which was decisive for the coming years. Because in 2008, Gilberto Silva and myself, we were the last guys from that team before. And a year before, they have changed Thierry Henry, Patrick Vieira, Martin Kuhn, I think, was leaving already in 2004. But within two years, they got rid of all the personalities. And as I said, Gilberto and myself, we were the last ones. And I was coming into that dressing room when I had my little comeback. And there were guys like Robin van Persie, Cesc Fabregas, Alex Lebb, Thomas Rosicky, all young guys. And after one good game, they thought, oh, I'm on the top of the hierarchy. But you could feel that there was no hierarchy because they were too young to lead at the time. It wasn't their fault, but there was just no in-between generation which could actually transfer the old values and the approaches to training and to games onto this new generation, because there was a huge gap. And in my opinion, that was a transition which was too fast. They were looking at age and statistics and probably salaries and whatever, but keeping some of the good guys from before with a good, sometimes nasty approach would have helped.
Liverpool went through the same thing. I spoke about Man United. Liverpool went through the same thing in their latter years. The year before, when McMahon, Beardsley, once you get rid of people who understand, and we would have learned as young Liverpool players from Alan Hansen's and the Graham Souness's, and then all of a sudden, but when all of a sudden you get rid of 7 or 8 of the players who understood what that actually meant, the Liverpool way or whatever you want to call it, then you have lots of talented players. Jamie Redknapp, McManaman, Fowler, these are young, talented players, but there was no one there to show them the way. And that's the thing, that's where Sir Alex Ferguson was fantastic in terms of the transition between years of players. He didn't automatically get rid of all the players. He just, one or two left. And then when Ryan became a senior player, other young players came through. But if you systematically just trying to change things, you know, revolution rather than evolution, that's when it becomes difficult.
Yeah, was that Sir Alex's best, his best trait, Ryan, that he rebuilt sides, but subtly, so that it was never, as John is saying, you know, complete wipeout of the old and in with the new. There was a sort of a blend that always went through those sides, but he was having to change and reinvent all the time.
Yeah, I mean, he had the sort of luxury of he could go a season or two without winning the league. But I just touched on Alan Smith, Wayne Rooney, Cristiano Ronaldo the next year. That is players that, okay, we might not win it this year, but in 2 years, they're going to be 24, 25. They're going to be flying. And in the meantime, we've still got good players where we're competitive. Of course, he felt like he could win the league all the time, but he was constantly looking to the future. So we didn't go stale. And you never felt safe. You never felt safe, no matter who you were, if you were there 15, 20 years. And looking on the outside, that's what Liverpool have got. Now, if a new manager or another manager would have come in, would they have got rid of Jordan Henderson? Because, you know, he's maybe going to get a better player potentially in that position. You know, I think it was Brendan Rodgers who made him captain who might have seen something. But James Milner, you can't buy these sort of characters and players. Of course, they're good players as well, but the character, and I think Jens just said as well, personality. You know, not just character, personality. I look at Dwight York. Dwight York, I think he scored 20 goals every season for Aston Villa for like 5 or 6 years. You wouldn't say he's a get-in, kicking everyone, but his personality was amazing. He lit up a room when he come in. So that was a different sort of winner that come into the dressing room. So, yeah, character is a big thing, personalities and, of course, talent. And, yeah, we had a manager who was looking at this season, but also in two seasons, when are we going to peak? Which is a luxury, obviously, a lot of managers don't get, which he had, but he did it.
I just want to ask Ryan, you know, Sir Alex's last year, and you mentioned the fact that when Cristiano, Wayne Rooney came in, you had lots of experienced players, but he brought in the young players thinking about 2-3 years down the line to continue that consistency throughout. In his last year, when Van Persie came, and he must have been 30 probably, and you had a very experienced team, Rio, you had a lot of experienced players, but there weren't many young players actually coming in. And I think, do you feel that he felt that he's not going to be there now, and they hadn't won the league the year before, and that year that they actually won the league, which was a very, very experienced team, but not many young players coming through. Did you think Sir Alex knew that was his last year? And not that he can't be bothered to build for the future, but let's just win this league.
Well, I think, you know, if Sir Alex would have carried on, he would have probably kept the majority of them. So myself, I had another year after that. Patrice Evra, Vidic, Ferdinand, Robin van Persie. He would have kept the majority of us. But
there weren't many young players coming through that year in terms of signing young players that year for the future.
Yeah, he would have kept us playing 20, 25 games, but then brought two or three players that actually in a couple of years, they're the ones who are going to replace us. So that
but he
would
could have done that year, couldn't he?
Couldn't he have done that
that year, although he wasn't going to be there the following years
type
of thing?
Yeah, even though he wasn't. Yeah, I don't know whether he was thinking about the future, but I mean, that's what he would have done if he would have stayed, definitely.
How much more difficult is it now scouting players if, John, you're talking about you need that certain characteristic of a player? Because anyone can read the stats, anyone can see how much miles, you know, passes, whatever work they do, how they fit into a regime. But actually, you want that person, as you say, who's going to fit into the mold of Liverpool, United, Arsenal, whatever it might be.
It should be much easier now than it was back then, because back then you physically had to travel around the country, never mind traveling around the world, to learn about players like myself at Liverpool for Watford for 6 years before I went to Liverpool. They really did it. Brian Robson, how many years at West Brom before he went to Man United? Whereas now, unfortunately, what happens now is they look to see who's doing well for 6 months. And who's done well for 6 months as a player? Jadon Sancho. Do we know anything about him apart from what a great player he is? And he's going to cost 100 million. How do you know what you get? So I think the due diligence that they do now in terms of the stats, physically, how far you run, how many crosses you put in, but in terms of the character, what they used to do, like even from the old Liverpool days, and I'm sure Sir Alex would have been the same, talk to people. What's he like as a lad? How is he doing when things aren't going well? You know, and that's the character that you have to know about people rather than thinking he scored 40 goals. Yeah, he can run quickly. So, but now with the information, it should be much easier to learn about people's character. But because they're under pressure so much now, it's more about how many goals has he scored? How good is he? Yes, he's only been around for 6 months, cost £50 million. Let's get him. And then when he comes, you really don't know him. So I think they don't do their due diligence now in terms of the character. It's more to do with the statistics of how well they do.
What did Arsene Wenger learn about you, Jens, do you think, before you went to Arsenal?
Not a lot, I think.
You can tell by watching him play, though.
First of all, I think I was only second choice because he was going for Canizares, Spanish goalkeeper. Yeah. And then I have to say he was lucky to get me instead of him, because I was just taller. Physically, I was a little bit stronger, which turned out to be a big advantage in the Premier League. But apart from that, I think you must have heard that I was passionate on the pitch. And like Barnsley said before, it was difficult just to know everything about players. You could have watched him, and I know that he tried to find out something about my personality as well, which wasn't the best in this particular year in this particular time at Borussia Dortmund, because I got sent off with a red card 5 times in 3 years.
For a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
It's good going.
But three times double yellow. It's difficult, but nowadays it's you can look at people's Facebook and Instagram profiles. You learn a little bit about their characteristics, if they are posing too much or if they hang around with people who like this. How do you say that? Blink.
It's a bling.
Stuff like that. I think still education is important, or if you can find out if a player, even as a human being, is intelligent. Because I always used to say, if you have one intelligent player in your game who can manage and coach the other players around you, it's a fantastic advantage. If you have even two, you're nearly unbeatable. Look at Liverpool right now. You think that since Van Dijk arrived, and he's always organizing and telling, and he seems to understand the game really, really well, I think they're on a different level. What do you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why Jurgen Klopp, when we didn't get Van Dijk for the first time, and Jurgen, very much like Ryan said about Sir Alex, being fortunate enough to have the luxury of, we don't have to win this year because I'm not going to get fired, so I'm building for the future. When we didn't get Van Dijk and we had money to spend, other clubs would have said, well, let's get a centre-back, or that's what we need. And they said, no, we'll wait for him, although he's given the luxury of the time to wait for him. But he knew that's what we wanted, very much like the goalkeeper, Alisson. We knew the players we wanted, and he was given the time and the support to then say, let's not just spend money, because managers do that when they're under pressure. Then they'll say to the fans, look, I've spent 100 million. You know, you're putting me under pressure to spend money, and I've done it. Whereas Jurgen Klopp was fortunate that he didn't have to do that, but he wanted the right man. And that's why I think transfer, not just because of the COVID-19, I think you're going to see clubs now not spending as much as they did in the past for success. They're going to wait to try and choose the right person rather than just spending for the sake of it to keep the fans happy that they've spent 100 million. Arsenal went through that. Liverpool went through it. Spending so much money and not improving, still finishing fourth, but spending 100 million.
When Sir Alex was rebuilding, Ryan, did you get the sense that he was interested? Clearly, he was getting some of the best players in world football, but he was very interested in the personality, the character that was coming into that dressing room as well.
Yeah, because just imagine how many people Sir Alex Ferguson knows. He will know one person in nearly every club. So it's just a phone call, and he would just ask about the character, about the personality. That's all it takes, one phone call, whereas I get the feeling that managers don't do that anymore. And very often you'll get an answer straight away, you know, stay away from him, or he's not great in the dressing room, or yeah, he's brilliant in the dressing room, he's a great professional, you'll love him, you'll love working with him. And as well as being a good player, it's really important, because just a good player isn't sometimes going to improve you. It's not. It can have actually detrimental effect because of the pressure that it puts on his teammates or on the club or on the player itself. So, yeah, I agree with John that it's sort of a reset button now, that teams aren't going to do that. They're actually going to look for character. And I'm actually a big believer on looking in the lower leagues, because, you know, like the Dele Alli's of this world, because they're players who have built the character up, because they played in the lower leagues and they played games. So another subject is academies and not playing enough games. But these players that have played games, they've got 100 games in their belt, under their belt. So, yeah, I think we'll see a lot more of that, a lot more. Of course, they've got to be good players, but a lot more of them characters who have gone through it, gone through disappointments, had to work for it. And bigger clubs, I think, will do that.
Yeah, but I think a problem with that, and Ryan made the point about Sir Alex following on people in other clubs, I think managers in the old days had a better relationship with each other. As much as you may have had the rivalry, they had a relationship where it was honesty, they could trust each other, and they speak to each other about players. Now with managers, you imagine, you know, a manager phoning up on another manager, and you have a player on 150 grand a week who's causing a problem, and another manager phones you up to then say, what's he like? You're going to say he's a great lad. Go and buy him. You know what I mean? Just to get him out the door. You know, because if you phone up about Adrian Mutu at Chelsea, they're going to say, oh, he's a fantastic lad. Don't worry about him. And I don't think that managers have that relationship now with other, because as Ryan says, he would have known coaches, physios, just people at other clubs. Whereas now, this whole thing about our club, we don't have anything to do with any other club. Sir Alex couldn't phone anybody up in Liverpool and ask a question about a player, because if that person gave him a good answer and it was a good player, he'll get the sack for giving him a good player. So, you know, those days, I think, are gone. As an international manager, Ryan, you can do that, but I'll tell you, don't be phoning Jurgen to ask him anything.
You're right. I remember Alex Ferguson always calling Arsene Wenger in my time. He was always on the phone with him, having nice chats. Asking about players.
So now, Barnes, are you saying it's the opposite?
Yeah, it's the opposite. Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah, so when they say he's a bad lad, yeah, you say you take him. Could be the double bluff, though. Just don't trust him.
Let me ask a question. What do you think now is after COVID-19? There are so many players on loan for big clubs. And they say that the market for mediocre players has collapsed. So what do big clubs now do with their players on loan? I mean, they all have to come back, because I guess that their wages are much too high for the respective clubs. What happens now?
It's crazy. We know Chelsea had 36 players out on loan and loan all over Europe. But now, if that's not going to happen, I suppose you just have to. The problem you're going to have is when those players come back to the club, they can't even be in the reserves or the under 23s because there's so many players. What happens to those players when their contracts run out? Then, and of course, they're getting paid a lot of money. You have players who aren't even in the first team squad who are earning a lot of money. I think those days are gone. Once those contracts are up and those players have to go and find clubs, I think they'll have to be prepared to take a lot less money. This causes a big problem, I think, loan-wise.
I think we'll see what happens in the future. Yeah, our time has run out again, gents. It has whizzed by once more. The Champions Club is over for another week. So a huge thank you to Ryan Giggs, Jens Lehmann, and John Barnes. Always great to share your thoughts with everyone at beIN Sports. The Champions Club will be back next week. We hope you can join us then. From us all, stay safe.